Hey, what's up, Toby? We made it another week.
Yeah, hey, happy Friday.
That's right. We are rocking and rolling today. I want to talk about decision making.
Oh,
that's the
you
top
got some
topic of
decisions
choice.
You want to make?
There's always lots of decisions, more that I probably don't want to make, but
right?
But look,
that's part of
but
adulting
the thing,
right there. Realizing how few decisions you actually want to make. For a second
here you
before
go.
we get into where you want to go, decision fatigue, right?
Oh God, yeah.
Like, what's for dinner? By that time of day, and it comes every day, I'm kind of pooped out. And so there's a myriad of decisions. So I'm kind of curious from, do I put on my pants before my shoes to what's for dinner?
Yeah.
Do I brush my teeth before I fall in bed? What layer of decision making are you thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking business decisions, right? So
okay.
there's all the anecdotes of like, Steve Jobs always only had like one outfit,
right?
Right. Obama had the one, the one black suit or something, because they wanted to make sure that their decisions were clear and clean.
Totally.
And I think the reason why I want to talk about business decisions is because they're just so hard to track after the fact. I'm not talking like before the fact.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'm talking like doing like retros at the business decision level.
That's a really interesting.
And it
was it an effective decision is what you're asking. How do we?
Yeah. How do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there an example of a decision that you've been thinking about, or maybe abstracted, but I think it's a super interesting question, because I immediately go to most organizations today are so short-term focused that, it's, did I keep my job at the quarterly earnings call?
Yeah. For sure. The best thought or the best way that I've seen that enacted in a company is I worked at an e-commerce company for a while, and they in the purchasing department, and they looked for the mean absolute percentage error on purchasing.
Okay.
And so what they did was they would figure out, are the purchasing individual, do they bias high or bias low?
Oh, interesting.
On their purchasing. And it was really cool. Like it was done in a way that empowered the team for them to have some self-awareness around, hey, I know that when I purchase high or I purchase low, because it's in inventory, it's always this balance of like, well, you can have 100% ship, you can ship everything.
Yeah.
But that means that you need to have infinite inventory, which finance doesn't want.
Right.
So finance wants to keep your stocks on hand really, really low. That leads to stockouts. And so it was this really, really good example in operations of tracking people's decision making based on their job. And so that's kind of where I go when I think about this. But then that leads to, how is this done at the strategic levels, or how is this done in our day-to-day jobs?
Chris, what I love about the example that you just shared is that you also pointed at the natural tension in the business between the actions of purchasing, who want infinite supply, and the counterbalancing tension that finance introduces, which is to say, don't put all of our money into inventory. And so there's that little bit of tension is really clear. Individual purchasers probably weren't contemplating that, but you were able to arrive at a point of bias. It makes me think for our strategic decisions, where is that point of tension? There has to be some natural limit. And so too often strategic decisions, with truly strategic decisions, are turning a battleship of effort.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Rarely is it a motorboat kind of action where it's like, jig left and then jig back to the right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They may feel strategic depending on where you're at in the organization, but in terms of shifting the outcomes of the overall, it's a lot smaller. And so I'm imagining when you say strategic, we might be talking about launching a new product line, a new partnership, an acquisition. How do we know if that was the right choice? And what is that natural tension? It makes me think about like the HP Compaq merger,
Oh, yeah.
for a lot of our listeners, they may be, what is that? You know, battle of the printers. It's, you know,
yeah.
But we have a whole host of these things that we often don't realize the consequences of them because the knock-on effect is so nuanced.
Yeah.
Well,
what's interesting, the other thing that's interesting is like, I think the challenge can become, it becomes a political problem, right? Which is like, how am I as an individual assessing what the strategy is and how do I apply that strategy to my area or not do it? Because I think sometimes we forget that not doing something is a decision and oftentimes can be the right decision.
Yeah. Wow. We were talking earlier this week about the scientific approach, you know, to publishing and made the comment that rarely is it a solo act. It's usually a group of folks that have collaborated to publish, you know, big pieces of work. But there's an inherent bias in which they're asking what's wrong with my theory. And that's the lens that incremental peers bring to it, which is totally counter to how the corporate world works. And to your point, it's a political will as opposed to a strong grounded theory. So should, maybe I'll ask the question this way, like, is testing of a strategic decision, are we testing it from a political lens? Or are we trying to test it from a validity and an effectiveness lens, from a grow the business lens? Because sometimes it's antics on Wall Street and it puts our name in the headlines and our stock price goes up, you know?
Yeah.
What kind of lens are you thinking about?
I think the first thing that you have to do is you got to make sure that you have a strategy. I'm not even trying to be flippant there, but like, I think sometimes strategy... It's coming up with a really solid strategy, specifically one that's, you know, a year out, is actually a lot harder than we think.
Yep, fair.
And practically what that looks like is what is, I always go back to, there's a book on strategy that I read that just talked about strategy is like having a illness and having to go to a doctor where there's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. You go to the doctor. The doctor gives you an action plan, which is like, this is what we're going to do. And then there's an outcome of better health. And I think sometimes people forget to just, when it comes to strategy, just to think about those. Yeah. Right. So what problems are you solving for what people?
Yeah.
What actions or what directions are you going to take and how are you going to resource them? Because it does come down to, you know, that's great. Like, you can have a strategy all you want, but if you're not resourcing, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Right. Or the other thing is like, you can have a strategy all day and if you don't know what pain the people are in, then you're resourcing the wrong things. Right. If you don't have someone who has control of, you know, where those pieces go, then you're going to be too thin.
Yeah.
Right. Working on too many things.
I love the piece you didn't touch on that was inherent in your analogy, I think, is you have an expert providing a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I will say that there's been a lot of conversations where the role of the executive is misunderstood. They should be having a bunch of diagnosticians come in and opine
Correct.
From their unique areas of expertise, right? But instead, Correct. This idea of the... you know, the superhero CEO, the all-knowing, all-seeing one-man band, I think it's unfortunate because we don't necessarily let senior executives draw around them these experts that have developed new ways of diagnosing or new ways of solutioning. And so that raises a really interesting question. It does make me think then in terms of how we understand decision-making, is there even a framework? You know, if we don't know the causal chain of if this and that, it's really hard to know if the remedy was effective. So I have a fever and you plunge me in an ice bath and hold me underwater for 2 days.
Yeah.
My temperature is going to come down. I'll be dead. But, you know, they got the outcome.
One of the problems is like just raw accountability.
Yeah.
And it's the time component that makes it really difficult.
Are you talking about the resourcing element from a decision?
No, what I'm just thinking of, like, the ability to hold people accountable to their decision making means that there's a time component, which means that you're going to have to go back in time.
Right.
And you're going to have to determine what was predicted based on that decision.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest problem with that is if we go back in time, we would instantly be faced with terrible predictions that we make as human beings.
For sure. Yeah.
And probably the people that are the most accurate are also the people that are providing the longer timelines, which you don't have appetites for. And so that ends up being this really kind of counterintuitive business logic, which is hard things take a long time. And the appetite for doing hard things, unless it's blended with other long-term items, it's going to feel like, what have you done for me lately? And so I have a friend that just released a really cool, like, outward facing, client facing website. And I was like, and they shared it this quarter. And I was like, that is the coolest thing I've seen in a very long time. And I'm like, how long did that take? And they're like, 2 to 3 years. I'm like, yep, that's how long this stuff takes. Right. Just because you've got to have the foresight to code it in a way that you can get there. You have to balance all the other things that are coming in.
Yeah.
And you have to go and execute. And then you have to go through all of the rigmarole of getting something publicly facing, which means that you got to make sure that all your stuff is API'd and pen tested and all that, or pen tested.
Yeah.
Like, you have to do all those things. Like, it is an immense amount of work. And yet you couldn't have that expectation for every single quarter for that team to land like that, because that was such a huge effort. But among all of the org, it would make sense that stuff like that would start to fall.
Yeah.
If people are aligning towards a strategy, which, you know, in that case is, you know, put abilities into the client's hands.
Yeah. That's an interesting example of something that is, and legitimately, great big enterprise consumer facing websites. There's so much going on in all the complexity.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that for a while. So at first I thought 2 to 3 years, and I thought, okay, well, depending on what it is and the confidentiality, you know, that makes sense. So,
well, and a lot of it is, it was not necessarily the real calendar time. It's just, you have to have that direction, put a stake in the ground, you know, any loose ends that you have or extra time, extra cycles that you have in a sprint, you would throw it towards that direction. And so a lot of it was being strategic, putting those stakes in the ground, and then just marching in that way. And it just happened to land. Now, it took a lot of effort, but the calendar time took more because it wasn't a direct, hey, we should go do this now. Because if we were to say, hey, let's go do this now, then maybe that becomes a 6-month project.
Yeah. Chris, you know what it makes me think about? I worked in and around the internal audit function years ago. And there's a myriad of different ways that they try to assess risk. And internal audit's job is to understand, is the business functioning in a healthy and viable way, right?
Yeah.
Are we meeting all of the expectations that we've communicated to the public, whether it's ethical obligations or degree of risk, whatever the case is? And so auditors have a number of things that they'll review against. Everything from, you know, what was the intention? Was there a framework that was followed? To was there a governance process that a decision had to pass through? The question that raises for me, though, in light of this one, was your friend just successfully launched a website, 2 to 3 years of effort, let's say it that way, manpower.
Yep.
Does that individual now, has their star risen by virtue of having delivered on what they committed? Or did people understand? I'm wondering if it matters to be.
Oh, no, that's really, what's interesting is, this kind of goes back to a couple episodes ago. It's obvious after it's obvious.
Yeah.
Right. And so you basically know that this is the right direction, right? You basically make sure that you're carving carving time out every sprint planning. And then at the end, you deliver this and everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is so great. And so it's the outcome and the expectation is, and the acceptance of how good of an idea was really kind of after the fact.
Right.
And so it's kind of like in the absence of an overarching kind of strategy, it's a lot of people trying to figure out what the right thing is.
Yeah.
For them politically, for their teams politically, you know, and really ultimately what everybody wants up the chain.
Well, so I'm with you. Let's bring this back and put a bullseye on the how this relates to process, that which I think is the idea that decisions made without any kind of backcasting or confirmation,
yeah,
retrospectively, how do we know if it's creating problems or solving problems?
Yeah.
What are some thoughts that you might have around that? I mean, you and I have talked a lot about different kinds of decision bias,
yep, you know,
so being aware of that bias is part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a practical one that CEOs use today is zero-based budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
I think
just to force them to be intentional about resource allocation.
It forces them to think about their business. The challenge is you just end up with, you know, sharks and sheep, right? Yeah. Like you've got your people that are just basically there to enhance their career or the career around them.
Yeah.
And that still doesn't change the bias thing, but it is a good forcing function that forces people to communicate what the expectations are.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, we've talked about this a lot, just having a cohort, right? Like what's your cohort? What are your constraints? Cause you will end up finding out where the work needs to be done. And if you're doing work, I don't know if we've talked about Eli Goldratt's book called The Goal, but it talks about constraints. And he has it's a story, but it's a story on how if you fix constraints, then you fix the system. And so I think if you're working on something that's not a constraint, you're not actually making, you essentially are building process debt.
That's interesting.
Because you're not making the system any better.
Yep. So can you explain, I guess the two qualifiers I heard is, what does this decision do to shift existing resources?
Yep.
Zero-based budgeting. And then the idea of constraint, are you addressing an existing operational constraint?
Yeah.
Binary question.
Yeah. Are you making the system better? And then, you know, then the other one is just retros.
Yeah.
Like if we were forced to make a decision a month and then just, or maybe even a decision a quarter and just say, hey, when do you expect this to be? We would probably all end up in a deep depression because our predictions are so terrible.
That is interesting. Do you think the decision-making is like a muscle, that it gets better the more often it's used? Or do you think that it fatigues?
I think it's like practicing golf. You can go out to the range and just swing a ball.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you professionals are not practicing that way.
Yeah.
And so just because you go out to the driving range and hit a ball doesn't mean that your game's actually getting better, because you're just basically taking a crappy swing and just doing it more.
Right.
And so unless you can turn it into a practice,
yeah,
and you can measure decisions going in and decisions going out. Mm-hmm. And I think what you would do, and we played around with this a little bit with the cash flow calculator.
Yeah.
Which is like, look, if you take finances, whatever those are, and you put a prediction on when the sales are going to come in and what your operating expense are, and you track that.
Yeah.
And you see that over time, it forces people to think slower versus thinking fast. Oftentimes in meetings is just pushing the decision off.
Interesting. I don't know if we landed something. I do think
no,
we covered
right,
some ground. Maybe we'll come back to it in a future episode.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had the conversation though.
I leave with
it is
and I do answers.
It is a quandary.
It's hard.
And I do think
really hard.
I do think that you're either going to get significantly better with GPTs and generative AI and with your decision making, or you're going to be forced to make more decisions and do it just this same way over and over again. Like I do think that those two will come together.
Chris, I guess the thought the cut that I take away from this is that idea of like, what is your perfect practice as an individual, yours, mine, whoever, right? And if we're not intentional about how we come at the practice of decision-making, it's super hard to know how to evaluate it. So that may be a good place to start.
That is the start. Figure out what decisions you're making.
Yeah.
And start with yourself. And if you're a manager, start with your people. Just don't do multiples. Like pick one a quarter and see if that works.
That's an interesting exercise. Run your business as business as usual for a day, for a week, for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see what happens and make it better. All right. All right, sir. We made it through another one.
All righty. More to come.
Talk to you later.
See you, buddy.